Mrs. Wright. Yes, she lived next door to me. It was her that got me my first lodger. It was when I'd been retired for about 6 months, and I was right enjoying myself. The first time in my life that I had a bit of peace and quiet. It was very nice, I can tell you, being a widower myself. Oh, very nice. It was peaceful, you know, when I retired. And Mrs. Wright, yes, she's a widow, like, lives next door to me. And one morning she said to me, she said...
You know what you ought to do, Mr. Riley?
She said.
You ought to get yourself a young man in that spare bedroom of yours. It'd be a right nice thing for you.
She says.
I mean, I know you've got your old age pension, but that's nothing, really. What you need is a right nice young man.
She says.
I mean, you could get 25 bob for that room just for sleeping. I mean, there's plenty of young men who'd be glad to have that room. Plenty. And it would be a bit extra for you.
She says.
You'd have nothing to do for him. It'd be money for nothing.
She said. Well, I thought she's right, you know. I could do with a bit extra, because, I mean, your pension's nothing, is it? Bye, I thought 25 bob would be lovely. Bit of backer money, a pint or two of a Saturday and a Sunday, and, yes, maybe a trip off somewhere now and again. Yes, Mrs. Wright's right. A right nice young man would just do for me. But then I thought, yes, aye, that's all right to talk about it. But where am I going to get a right nice young man from? I mean, there's some rum'uns about these days, you know. I was only reading in the paper up the library the other day about a young chap been up in court for selling all his landlady's furniture, every stick of it he sold, vases and all. Well, I couldn't have that happening to me, I'd be done for. Just fancy going off for a walk for a couple of hours and when you come back, finding all your furniture's gone. Well, it's not right, is it?
You don't have to worry about that, Mr. Riley.
Says Mrs. Wright, she says.
I've just got the right type for you, just the right type. It's a young chap who's a teacher,
she says.
Mrs. Harrison was telling me about. Well, it was what Mrs. Harrison had heard through that Mr. Whatchamacallim, where's that grocer's shop up Johnson Avenue? Well, Mrs. Harrison says that this young chap, this teacher, she says he's in digs down Low Road and he's having to pay £3.10 a week and he only gets one meal a day at night. She says to me, only yesterday, she says...
It's daylight robbery, Mrs. Wright.
She says, and I said, yes, it is, Mrs. Harrison. I says, taking all that money off a poor young chap and him getting nothing in return, I says. They want locking up some people, I says. And she says...
Yes, they do.
Well, it's not right, is it, Mr. Riley? So I says to Mrs. Harrison, I says, I think I know just the place for that young chap, Mrs. Harrison. Just the place. It's Mr. Riley. Yes, that old gentleman who lives on his own. He's got a spare room, and it'll be a right nice thing for Mr. Riley, I says. And Mrs. Harrison says...
Well, will you ask him, Mrs. Wright?
So I says, yes, I will, Mrs. Harrison. First chance I get, I'll ask him, I says.
And that's how I got my first lodger. John Burns, they called him. He was a right nice young fellow and all. Very polite and all that. I did what I could for him. He was no trouble at all, no trouble, but... Well, not really. He gave me 25 bob for the back bedroom and did all his own cooking. Mrs. Wright used to come in once a week and do the room out and wash a couple of sheets for him. Well, it was worth 5 bob not to have the worry of it. Every Friday morning she used to come in about 9:30, just as I was going out. Ooh, she can talk, that one. If she could write as well as she can talk, she could write a book a day. Talk? I'm not kidding. I've never had anyone like her. Anyway, this John Burns was a little stocky chap with fair hair and glasses. Only about 5'4" he was, but the way he used to gallop and bound up them bedroom steps, you'd have thought he was 6'6" and 15 stone. 7:30 he used to get up, you could set your watch by him. That's him rolling out of bed and banging his bedroom door. I had to go for a wash every morning sharp at 7:30. Thumpety-thump, thumpety-thump, down the stairs and up the stairs a dozen times. Well, first morning it was with me, I heard all this going on. I jumped up out of bed and I goes as quick as I can to my bedroom door. Me old hat bumping away and I says...
Hey, Mr. Burns!
I says...
Is there a fire or something?
Well, he stops halfway down the stairs like and he looks up at me in his pyjamas he was and his hair all over his eyes and he says...
Oh! I've forgotten my glasses!
Thumpity thump is back up them stairs like nobody's business. Well, it stunned me a bit like did all this hurrying and scurrying. I didn't rightly know what to say or to do like. Though I couldn't smell no burning or nothing. Well, in a minute, well, no, maybe about 10 seconds, Mr. Burns rushes out of his bedroom with his glasses on this time. And he says as he's bounding down the stairs...
Morning, Mr. Riley! Oh, there's no fire! It's only me getting ready for work! I'm sorry if I disturbed you.
Oh, that's all right, lad,
I says.
I just thought there was a fire or something.
But I don't think he heard me, because by the time I'd finished, there was a bit more clattering and banging in the kitchen. Well, this performance went on every morning, but it wasn't so bad when I got used to it. He was a nice fella, really, very polite and all that. He always knocked at my front room if ever he wanted anything. Always said please and thank you. He was always apologising about something or other. Like the morning, I put his breakfast on for him. You see, before he came to lodge with me, I always used to get up myself about, well, 7:30 and make myself a cup of tea, like. But when he came, I thought, well, I'll have that extra 1 hour in bed, and then I won't be in his way, like, when he's getting ready and that. So I lies in my bed for a week or so, and then one morning, I wakes up at 7:00, and I was gagging for a cup of tea. Anyway, I thinks I won't get up, but be about 7:20, I couldn't stand it no longer. So ups I get, and down I go to make a cup of tea. Well, while I'm down there, I might as well make myself a bit useful, I thought. So I puts the frying pan on the gas, and I pops Mr. Burns a rasher of bacon in and an egg, and I leaves it on a low light. He'll be right pleased about that, I thought. And then the kettle starts singing. And I mashes me tea. Now then, milk, sugar. And I brings me a pot of tea on a saucer back to bed with me, because it's no good me being down there and getting knocked about in the rush hour. So I just gets past his bedroom door and... The young fella's up and out. I spills half my tea in my saucer.
Oh,
I says.
Mr. Burns,
I says.
I've put your breakfast on for you.
Oh, right, thank you. I'm sorry if I've disturbed you.
And then he was gone, down the stairs. And in the kitchen. Oh, so well, when I gets into my bed, drinking my tea, listening to the noises outside and the noises downstairs, then in about 5 minutes, the young fella comes bounding up the stairs. And then he knocks on my bedroom door and pops his head round all flustered like.
Oh, I'm sorry to disturb you, Mr. Riley, but you know that egg that you put on to fry for me? Well, I'm sorry, but it's jumped out of the frying pan and onto the floor.
Oh, I says. It's jumped out of the frying pan and... onto the floor, the egg?
Yes, Mr. Riley.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, lad, I says. But I've never had eggs like that before.
Well, no, but I'm sorry to trouble you, but do you possibly think I could borrow another one?
Another one?
Yes, please, if you don't mind. I'll pay you at the weekend.
Yes, that's all right, Mr. Burns. Take one out of the pantry.
Right, thank you, Mr. Riley.
That's all right, lad. Hey, and I say, Mr. Burns.
Yes, Mr. Riley.
I'm sorry about it jumping out of the pan like that, the egg. I'll have to have a word with Mrs. Wright about it.
Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you.
When he got off to work, I lay abed thinking about that egg. Jumping out of the pan like that. Well, it had me flummoxed. You know, at first I thought it must be me that hadn't hit the pan with it. But then I knew it couldn't be me, because I remember seeing the yellow yolk smiling at me from the bottom of the pan. No, no. Then I thought, well, it must have been the fat that had splurted like and blown the egg over the side. But it must have been a powerful splurt, because the sides of the pan are about 2 inches high. Oh, no, it couldn't be that at all. No, I'll tell you what I think happened. I think that the young fella knocked the handle with his arm or something when he was jumping around, and the egg slithered over the top and onto the floor. Yes, that's what I think happened, and Mrs. Wright agrees with me. But we never said anything to Mr. Burns about it, because he was a nice young chap, really, very polite and all that. But he kept forgetting things, like his glasses or his books for school or his bus fare. And one morning he forgot to put his jacket on, and he got nearly to the bus stop before he realised what was happening, and he was wet through by that time. One of these days he'll be forgetting his trousers, and then he'll know about it, I used to think. But Mrs. Wright kept her eyes open, to see that nothing like that happened. Well, I mean, he'd have looked daft, wouldn't he, walking down the street with his books under his arm and no pants on, eh? Well, aye. Well, he stayed with me for just over 6 months, did Mr. Burns. And, you know, I got right used to him being about, and he always paid up on the dot on Friday tea time. I can tell you, I was right sorry when that young fella told me he was leaving to go to Canada.
I'm sorry if I've been any trouble, Mr. Riley.
He said to me that Friday tea time when he told me he were going.
I've been happy here with you, but I've got this job offered as a school inspector in Canada, and it's too good to turn down. Oh, I'm sorry if I've been any trouble.
No, you've been no trouble at all, Mr. Burns, no trouble at all. I'm only sorry you're having to go, but I wish you the best of luck, lad.
Thank you, Mr. Riley. Oh, I'm sorry to be leaving you. Oh, and I'm sorry if I've been any trouble.
And so in another fortnight he was off. But before he went, he gave me a new pipe as a present. Yeah, he was a nice young fellow with that. I do hope he found his way to Canada all right and got some good digs and that. Often think about him, and that egg. Yeah, I missed him when he went, but then I thought, well, it'll be nice to be on my own and get some peace and quiet. Will you need a bit of peace and quiet when you're older? Now, one morning, about 2 or 3 days after Mr. Burns had gone, Mrs. Wright says to me, she says,
I'll bet you miss him, don't you, Mr. Riley? I was only saying to Mrs. Harrison, I was saying, I'll bet Mr. Riley misses that young fella, Mrs. Harrison, I says. They got on right well together, them two, they did. And that money was right useful to him and all, I says, right useful. Well, it was, wasn't it, Mr. Riley? So Mrs. Harrison says to me, she says,
do you know, it's funny you should mention that, Mrs. Wright,
she says,
because my son knows a right nice young fella is looking for lodgings.
So I says, is that right, Mrs. Harrison, I says, who is it? And she says,
well, he's some sort of an artist fella, Mrs. Wright,
she says,
and he's been living up on the moors for a year or two painting fields and birds and all that carry on,
she says,
living like a hermit, Mrs. Wright, he has, and now he wants to come and paint pictures in a town.
Oh, does he now, Mrs. Harrison, I says, well, is he a nice young fella?
Oh, yes, he is, Mrs. Wright.
She says,
he's a right nice young fella. Very quiet and that, doesn't say much, but he's a right nice chap.
So I says to Mrs. Harrison, I says, well, I'll ask Mr. Riley about it when I see him, and I'll see what he says, Mrs. Harrison, I says. Did I do right, Mr. Riley?
And that's how I got my second lodger. He was a big, broad-shouldered young fella, was Mr. Robert. Now then, was it Mr. Robert or Mr. Lewis? I never could get his name right. I knew it was either Robert Lewis or Lewis Robert. It's funny how you get names round about face sometimes. Anyway, this Mr. Lewis was a right artist-looking fella. Long black hair and bushy eyebrows and baggy pants and leather patches on his jacket elbows. I should say he'd be about 30-odd. But to say he was so old, he hadn't got what you might call much gumption-like. I'm not saying he was daft-like. Oh, no, far from it. He was a very clever fella in his own way. Well, he must have been to be an artist, mustn't he? It was just that he lived in his own little world and didn't bother about clocks and regular meals like us civilised people has to do. But really, that didn't worry me, because he were no trouble. I always say live and let live, and what other people does is no business of mine, except if it interferes with my life. He used to get up of a morning, this artist chap, about 10 or 11... have a cup of tea and a biscuit, and then he was off for the day with his suitcase. More often than not, I never saw him from one day till the next, but he was no trouble. Well, not much. Well, not until he was due to pay up. And even then, I don't think he meant to get his hand fast. It was just that he hadn't much time to be thinking about money, same as we have to do. Only didn't worry him, and I suppose he thought it didn't worry other folk. Though, if you ask me, I think he had a bit of brass tucked away in the bank, and I'll tell you why I think that. I think that because after the first week he'd been with me, he says to me on a Friday, he says,
how much do I owe you, Mr. Rollinson?
Now, it's funny. He would always get in my name mixed up as well, though I don't know why, because Mr. Ryle is an easy enough name to remember, isn't it?
Oh, 25 shillings, Mr. Robert.
I says,
right-o,
he says,
I'll just write you out a wee cheque.
Here, hold on a minute, lad, I says,
I don't want no cheques. It's not that I don't trust you, like, but I never have dealt with cheques all my life, and I don't want to start now. If you haven't got enough loose on you to pay me now, pay me tomorrow,
I says. Well, he didn't say anything, like, and he put his cheque-book back in his pocket, and then he fiddles about in his other pockets and puts a handful of loose change on the table.
How much is there there, Mr. Rawlinson?
He says. So he counts it, and there's 27 and 6 pence 8d. In half crowns, 2 bob shillings, a tanner's 8d, buttons, a penknife, and a piece of silver paper. So he counts out 25 shillings, gives it to me, and he's off. Well, I never saw him again until the next Wednesday morning. Well, he must have come in late. I didn't hear him on the Tuesday night. Anyway, Wednesday morning he comes down and he says...
Morning, Mr. Rawlinson.
And I says...
Morning, Mr. Lewis.
And he says...
I'll be going away for a couple of days, Mr. Rawlinson. I've got some work to do out of town, so don't worry about me being away.
He never said anything about him just being away from Friday till Wednesday. So I thought, well, if he's not going to say anything, I'm not either. So I just says...
Oh, that's all right, Mr. Robert. Just please yourself.
And then he says a funny thing. He says, right out of the blue, like, he says...
All people seem to want is noise,
he says.
They dinna seem to be happy unless there's a lot of noise going on around them.
Oh,
I says.
I never thought about that before, Mr. Lewis.
Well, you know what I mean, Mr. Rawlinson.
He says.
Motor cars and buses and these jets and the wireless and television.
Yes,
I says.
Aye, motorbikes and all.
Aye, that's right.
He says.
Everything that's happening's full of noise. People get so used to it, they cannae do without it. Take the wireless, for instance. Most people have it on as soon as they get up. They switch it on like cleaning their teeth. They don't like listen to it, really, do they? I mean, it's just noise in the background. I bet if you had to ask a housewife what tunes they played on Housewife's Choice as soon as it's finished, I bet she couldn't tell you more than one or maybe two, and maybe none at all.
Oh, yes, I...
And then you go out into the streets and you hear the engines revving and roaring and brakes screeching and tram cars clattering and jets screaming and scarring a clear blue sky. And you go into an office and you hear typewriters clack-clacking and telephones jangling. And you go into a factory and you hear the machines banging and clanking. It's noise, noise, noise everywhere you go.
Yes, you're right, Mr. Robert. Oh, come to think of it, you're right,
I says. And then he said...
Good morning.
I've never set eyes on him since. I waited a week after he'd gone, then I had a look around his room to see if he'd left any clothes or equipment, just to check and see whether he'd really intended to come back or not. But he'd left nothing, nothing at all, except a long-sleeved blue jersey with a hole in the sleeve. He took my key as well. He never even dropped me a postcard to say where he was or what he was doing or whether he was coming back. No, nothing. He just vanished into thin air, as you might say. Mrs. Wright was terribly upset about it. I often wonder where he's got to, that young fella. But you know what I think, and Mrs. Wright agrees with me, I think he got fed up with the town and he went back to live like a hermit up on the moors, same as he used to do with the fields and the birds. Well, that's what I think. And when I thinks about it, I often wish I'd taken that check he offered me. It had been a right experience for me to go to the bank with it. But Mrs. Wright says I did right not to take it.
You don't want no trouble with checks, Mr. Riley,
she says.
They bounce, and I don't know what else.
She says, and she's right, you know. I'm always reading about that sort of carry-on in our local paper up at the library. Well, anyway, it's too late now. He's gone now. And I thought, well, I'll have the house to myself. I'll be able to have a bit of peace and quiet. Well, after about a month after the artist chap had done his bunk, Mrs. Wright heard about this young lass. Well, it was Mrs. Wright that had heard about her from Mrs. Harrison, who'd heard about her from Mrs. Smith, the school caretaker's wife.
She's an orphan, poor lass,
says Mrs. Wright one morning, just as I was going out.
And she's got no mother, no father, and she's paying £3.10 just for a room down Market Street. So I said to Mrs. Harrison, I said, she's just the right sort for Mr. Riley, I says. And she's got a good steady job down at Dalton's, that big office in town. To say she has no parents or nothing, she's a right nice lass, and as honest as the day is long, and that's what Mrs. Harrison says. She says...
Do you know, Mrs. Wright?
She says...
I could trust that poor lass like my own daughter, I could.
And I said, yes, you're right, Mrs. Harrison. She seems like a right nice young lass to me, I says.
No, Mrs. Wright.
I says...
Thank you very much, like, but I don't want no more lodgers just now, thank you. Especially not a lass.
Well, once bitten, twice shy, I always say. Especially after the artist chap had done his bunk like that, leaving me in the cart. And Mrs. Wright was quite nice about it when I said, no more lodgers just now, thank you. And she said...
Oh, that's quite all right, Mr. Riley. I just thought I'd mention it, seeing as how she's such a nice lass and an orphan and everything. But it's all right. If you say no, I know you mean no.
Yes, Mrs. Wright, I says. I do mean no.
Right. Thank you. Good morning.
She was a nice lass, this orphan, and she moved in with me on the Friday night. Mrs. Wright fixed it for me. She was just 21, she told me, and her name was Sarah Ann Jones. She was brought up in a home near Liverpool, she said, but she never said how she came to live round our way, and I didn't ask her, because it's nothing to do with me, is it? Anyhow, this Sarah Ann Jones seemed a right nice lass to me, and when she comes on the Friday, she says to me, she says,
"I'll pay you now, Mr. Riley, I will, and then I won't be after spending it before the weekend comes,"
she says. And to be honest, she sounded a bit Irish to me, with a bit of Yorkshire thrown in, but I didn't mention anything to her because, well, she seemed a nice lass, and it's nothing to do with me where she comes from, is it? Well, we got off to a right good start together, we did. I never hardly knew she was in the house, up early of a morning without so much as a murmur, in a bed at 10 o'clock sharp. No bustling and banging and no disappearing. And quiet as a mouse she was, until the Tuesday the following week when she comes down to see me about 8:30.
"I'm fed up to the flaming teeth, Mr. Riley,"
she says. So I says,
"Oh, I what's to do, lass?"
"Well, it's yon job of mine,"
she says.
"People telling me what to be after doing all the day long."
"Oh, aye,"
I says.
"And what do you do, then?"
"I work in an office, and I'm fed up of being told what to do all the day long. I don't mind the fellas telling me, but it's yon women that gets up my cuff. 'Yo, girl, do this, do that. Fetch this, fetch that.' They're like old hens clacking at you all the day. They must think I'm a kid or something. No, I can't stand it much longer, Mr. Riley. It's getting me all, what's the word, you know, flusterated, or whatever it is. No, Mr. Riley, me thinks I'll be after looking for another job very shortly."
Well, I felt right sorry for the lass, and I said to her, I said, it was no use her sticking the job if she didn't like it. And I knew what she meant when she said the women were always on to her, because, well, I'd had a basin full of that myself. But I says,
"Sarah Ann,"
I says,
"don't chuck your job up till you've got another one. And work your notice out proper,"
I says.
"And then there won't be no trouble, like."
Anyway, I didn't hear no more about it till the next Monday. And then she comes home early. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it was. And I says,
"Ah, you've come home early today, Sarah Ann,"
I says.
"What's to do? Are you poorly, lass?"
Although I knew what the trouble was like.
"No,"
she says.
"No, I'm not poorly. I've just told them what to do with their job."
"Oh, aye,"
I says.
"And what did you tell them, lass?"
"Well,"
she says,
"I wouldn't be after repeating it to a gentleman like yourself, Mr. Riley. But I think you know what I mean."
"Oh,"
I says.
"It's like that, is it?"
"Yes, it is, Mr. Riley."
So the following morning, this young Sarah Ann, she gets up early. She tells me she's going looking for a job.
"I don't wish to sponge off of nobody, Mr. Riley,"
she says to me.
"I'll be getting myself a job somewhere or other. You'll just see if I don't."
It was about 5 in the afternoon when she came back. She looked tired out, poor lass, tired out she did, but I didn't say anything. I just waited to see if she'd got anything to tell me.
"By Jove, what a day I've had, Mr. Riley. By Jove, what a day,"
she says, and she manages to smile, tired as she was.
"I've been to 12 different places, Mr. Riley. 12. Mind you, 12 places, Mr. Riley,"
she says.
12?
I says, shocked I was.
"Yes, 12, Mr. Riley, 12.
She says.
"Oh,"
I says.
"And did you get one after all that, then?"
"Oh, yes. I got a job all right. Wilson's Iron Foundry is a labourer, and it's taken me all day to get that one."
"Wilson's Iron Foundry?"
"Yes, down Scargate Lane."
"As a labourer?"
"Yes."
"Oh, well, never mind, as long as you've got something. Come on and have a cup of tea, lass. You must be ready for one after all that trailing about you've done."
Well, I makes her a cup of tea and she starts to tell me about looking for this job. She goes to one place after another and all they want from her is references. And as soon as she says she hasn't got any, they don't want no more to do with her. Then she tells me that she's never been able to get references. And she reckons it's because when she was in the orphanage, she had a fight with the mother, as they used to call the woman that looked after them. She says she caught this mother woman pinching stuff from the girl's locker, so she set about her. Well, she says after that, they sent her on to an approved school, and she reckons that's done her for life as far as references is concerned. But the lass has a sense of humour, and she's not bitter about it. She just takes it for granted that that was what was bound to happen to her anyway. Then she told me about going to the gasworks for a job.
"We pass this place,"
she says,
"and I sees this sign, 'No vacancies,' unless it's about a foot big. So I goes in, and there's a fella stood about, so I says to him, 'Any jobs going, mate?' And he looks at me and then points to this sign and says, 'Can't you read, pal?' So I says, 'Oh, no, mister, I come from China.' So he looks at me and then he says, 'Well, you better get back to China right sharp, pal,' he says. so I ups it quick.
Well, she goes on to tell me about one or two other places she went to. Then she tells me how she finally got a job.
I went into this foundry place,
she says,
and I was determined to get fixed up. It's now or never, Sarah Ann, I said to myself, and if you've got any symphony Moses, you'll help me, I says. We always used to talk to Moses in the orphanage, Mr. Riley. It's awful, is not it? Well, I goes up to the office in this place, and they send for a foreman, and he comes, and when he sees I'm a girl, he tells me straight off they don't want nobody. Oh, mister, I says, right plaiden-like, give us a chance. I'm living in lodgings with an old gentleman, and I owes him a week's rent. Have a heart, mister, give me a job, and I promise you I won't let you down. Well, he looks me up and down, weighing me up like, and then he says, well, I must say you look a strong, wiry lass. All right. Report to me at 7 in the morning. 7, I said. Yes, he said, 7. And you better work hard or else. So that's how I got my job, Mr. Riley. And it bucked me up no end, I can tell you.
But look here,
I said.
I mean, labouring in an iron foundry is not for a lass like you. It's a man's job.
Oh, don't worry about that, Mr. Riley. I've done plenty of men's jobs before, and they make you tough in them homes, you know.
She would have it that she could do the job, so, well, I left it at that. I thought, well, perhaps she's got mixed up and it's not a labourer's job, but perhaps it's a bit of sweeping up or something like that. Anyway, I was pleased she got herself fixed up, and Mrs. Wright was too. She says to me, she says,
I hope she does right well, Mr. Riley, I do,
she says.
Poor lass deserves a chance, and that's what Mrs. Harrison says and all.
The following morning, young Sarah Ann's up sharp at 6 o'clock, and she's off down that road to a new job, happy as anything. Well, so she seemed, anyway. If you'd have seen her, though, when she came back at 6 that night, you'd have cried, you would. Oh. Poor lass, she was nearly bent double, holding her back like an old fella she was, and her face screwed up in agony. Now then, I says to her, what have you been doing to yourself, lass?
Oh, it's me back, Mr. Riley, it's me back.
Aye, I can see that, lass, but what have you been doing?
Oh, yon fella's nearly killed me today. We've been shovelling soot and carting castings about all through the day long. I'm fit for nothing at all. I'm packing this job up right sharp, I can tell you, Mr. Riley. Yon fella's a born slave driver. Oh, me poor back.
Nay, you're not back in the job in already, lass,
I says.
He's hadn't been testing you today to see what you're made of.
Aye, he's been testing me all right, but he won't test me no more. He can go and get some other poor creature to test, because he's tested me right out of this town, I can tell you, and no mistake. Oh, my poor back.
Well, I couldn't look around no way. She'd made up her mind to go, and go she did. Back to Liverpool, she said, and to her boyfriend, Bill.
He's a lovely boy, is Bill, and he's got faith in me. He told me so himself. And he says I can go back to him any time I want.
She was off the following day. She wanted me to take 10 shillings towards what she owed for her room, but I said I couldn't take anything off her. Well, you can't, can you? I said to her, you keep it and send me it on when you get yourself a job in Liverpool. You can't take money off a lassie that stake, can you? And that's what Mrs. Wright says. She says,
you did right to put your faith in her, Mr. Riley. She'll send you the money if she can. You see if she doesn't. Poor lass, it's a shame. No mother, no father, no nothing.
No, that's what she said to me. And she's right, you know. She always was, and I miss her now, Mrs. Wright, because she removed just a bit back, and I've never seen her since. But I'll never forget her, nor them 3 lodges she got me. And when the winter nights come, I often sit in front of the fire, smoking the pipe that the first lodger gave me, and wearing the blue jersey with a hole in the sleeve that the second lodger left behind. And I think about that young lass from Liverpool. Hey, I do hope she got on all right.
In The Three Lodgers by Norman Smithson, Wilfred Pickles played Mr. Riley, Mary Quinn played Mrs. Wright, and Anne Harris, Mrs. Harrison. Peter King played Mr. Burns, Graham Rigby, Mr. Lewis, and Helen Cotterill, Sarah Ann. The play was produced by Alan Akeborn in Leeds and first broadcast in 1965.